Hello, this is Dr. Alan Gaby, and today we will be mapping magnesium on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today, I'll be talking with Dr. Alan Gaby. Dr. Gaby is internationally recognized as an expert in nutritional therapy. He's past president of the American Holistic Medical Association and gave expert testimony to the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine on the cost-effectiveness of nutritional supplements. He's written numerous scientific papers in the field of nutritional medicine, and Dr. Gaby is the author of the renowned textbook, Nutritional Medicine, the second edition of which has recently been published, and you can find a link to the book in the show notes. And as Dr. Gaby said, we'll be mapping magnesium. We did a great job of moving through the story, the soup, and the skill, and what it means to address magnesium deficiency. So let's get started. So, Dr. Gaby, let's just have an overview of why magnesium is so important from your lens.
Sure. Magnesium is involved in about 300 different enzyme systems in the body, including the production of ATP, energy, which is necessary for almost all biological processes. The average American consumes less than the RDA for magnesium, and half of Americans get less than 80% of the RDA, so suboptimal or low magnesium status is extremely widespread. I would actually call it a public health problem. There are so many different conditions, many of them that they call psychosomatic, like fatigue, anxiety, or depression, or insomnia, and other more serious conditions like kidney stones, migraine headaches, mitral valve prolapse, osteoporosis, and heart disease that are triggered at least in part by suboptimal magnesium status. In my practice, probably the most important nutrient that I supplement for people is magnesium. As a matter of fact, almost everybody in a family practice, I think, could stand to benefit from getting extra either through diet or through supplements. I would venture to suggest that if people consumed adequate amounts of magnesium, the healthcare bill in America would probably drop 15 or 20% just from that.
That's quite a testimonial for magnesium. So let's look at that for a second through the lens of what I call the story, which are the antecedents, the triggers, and the mediators. It sounds to me like you're talking a lot about the triggers or the triggering events, which might be low dietary magnesium intake, or how about the soil? Are there any other things that you look at that are contributing to magnesium deficiency as a trigger or that are robbing magnesium from our bodies?
Well, absolutely. As you mentioned, the diet is low, and that's because we used refined foods. For example, white bread contains only 20% as much magnesium as whole wheat bread. In addition, there are certain farming techniques that lead to less magnesium getting into the foods. Perhaps the other very important factor is a vicious cycle related to stress. We're talking about perhaps biochemical stress or emotional stress. Mm-hmm. What happens is that the body pumps out adrenaline or epinephrine, and that causes magnesium to leak out of the cells into the bloodstream, after which it comes out in the urine. They've demonstrated this in animals, and they've demonstrated low magnesium status as a direct result of stress in humans as well. So magnesium depletion leads to less tolerance to stress, and it becomes a vicious cycle of more stress and less tolerance to stress, and magnesium depletion gets worse and worse. So we like to break this cycle by supplementing. You can get a lot more with dietary intake, but most people, it's not enough just to eat a healthier diet. Once you've gotten deficient, you need to supplement.
So before we talk about favorite foods or favorite forms of magnesium, let's get into the soup of the matter, that biochemical area, all the systems biology that we look at. And you've talked about a bit of it already. If we were to start with gastrointestinal status, where do you see magnesium deficiency contributing, or what signs and symptoms might we think of as related to a magnesium deficiency?
Well, there's an old saying, if it spasms, think of magnesium deficiency. And in the case of the GI tract, gastrointestinal spasm, which can be a component of irritable bowel syndrome, would be a factor there. In addition, it's an interesting issue that a British researcher brought up. He says that if you take too much supplemental magnesium, it causes your transit time to go very fast and you actually lose magnesium. So he calls it magnesium-induced magnesium deficiency. You see that occasionally. You need to supplement, but if you take too much, it actually becomes counterproductive.
So do you go by the bowel tolerance rule with magnesium supplementation when it comes to GI status?
Well, I don't know that you can actually estimate the proper dosage that way, but we certainly will cut it back if people are getting diarrhea because they're not utilizing it anymore. In general, I like to use between 200 and 600 milligrams a day of supplemental magnesium, and I like to spread it out at different meals because very few people can tolerate 600 milligrams at one time. And based on the condition we're treating, we go in that range. And some people don't tolerate oral magnesium. It becomes a problem.
Yeah. So what about, you talked some about stress, which brings us to the hormone and neurotransmitter arena of the soup of the matrix. Are there any other correlations in that area that magnesium has to hormone production, neurohormone production?
Well, it's involved in so many different enzyme systems, one could assume that it's involved in just about everything. But as far as whether there's a particular hormone deficiency or excess related to magnesium depletion, probably the adrenal hormones. Hans Selye spoke many years ago about the general adaptation syndrome. When people are under stress, they get thymic involution, they get adrenal hyperplasia, and they get gastric ulcers. And more recently, people have shown that magnesium wasting, which I actually alluded to before, is probably a fourth component of this general chronic stress syndrome. So I think the adrenals are impacted there.
Beautiful. So take me to your favorite areas in the matrix here for using magnesium, or where you see magnesium deficiency. You mentioned all the different enzymatic pathways. I know that's going to affect the heart and the brain. Where are your focuses in the use of magnesium?
There are so many different important areas. I'm not going to have time to discuss all of them. But one that's very important is the prevention of recurrent kidney stones. Calcium oxalate is responsible for about 75 to 80% of kidney stones. And we know that magnesium in the urine has a direct chemical effect on the solubility of calcium oxalate. If you have more magnesium in the urine, the propensity for calcium oxalate to form crystals is diminished. And therefore, if people are magnesium sufficient, they will put more magnesium out in the urine and it will reduce the risk of stone recurrence. There have been two studies in the past 40 years. Actually, the most recent one was 1990. It's hard to get researchers interested in following this up. But both of these studies showed that if you supplement with 300 to 500 milligrams a day of elemental magnesium in people who are having recurrent kidney stones, you can reduce the recurrence rate by about 90%.
Amazing.
So that's one area. The other area is just the general area of people who just are not making it in life. They're tired, they're anxious, they can't cope. They can't sleep. Sometimes they're depressed. And some of these drink too much alcohol. We know alcohol depletes magnesium. Sometimes they're on drugs that deplete magnesium, which would be thiazide diuretics or loop diuretics such as Lasix. People taking proton pump inhibitors, which seems to be just about everybody these days,
right,
also are at risk for developing magnesium depletion. So if you do nothing besides, say, take 200 to 400 milligrams of extra magnesium per day, sometimes within 24 to 48 hours, there's just a marked improvement in their ability to cope with their life. It's just such a simple and effective and inexpensive intervention.
And when you talked about alcohol depleting magnesium, are there other things like sugar that you might be thinking about that are also common in the American diet in particular that are depleting magnesium?
Well, the evidence there is more circumstantial. Certainly, when 20% of your calories, for example, come from refined sugar, that means you're diluting all of the micronutrients in your diet by about 20%. So in that respect, sugar does deplete magnesium. Whether it actually has a direct effect on causing increased excretion of magnesium, like we know it does for chromium, for example, that's less clear. But certainly people who are low in any micronutrient, including magnesium, you want to try to cut out the refined sugar.
And then when it comes to, if we're going over to the skills area, the right side of the functional nutrition matrix, and sleep and relaxation in particular in relation to magnesium, this might also connect to the structural integrity. Do you think of magnesium in relation to pain management or relaxation before bed?
Well, definitely relaxation before bed and definitely insomnia. And as I mentioned, if you break the vicious cycle, for example, if you're not sleeping well, because in part due to magnesium deficiency, and then you sleep better, your magnesium status will improve because there's less stress. So yeah, definitely that. And pain relief, there's actually some studies, it's conflicting, but there are some studies suggesting magnesium can improve the pain of fibromyalgia. We know that muscle cramps improve with magnesium supplementation in people who have suboptimal status. And actually, if you look at the anesthesiology literature, you find if they give intravenous magnesium during a surgical procedure, the postoperative pain is often much less once they wake up if they give them IV magnesium in addition to the anesthesia.
So IV magnesium is something that you were speaking to me about in relation to asthma. That would bring us over into the immune and inflammatory arena. How do you see that utilized in a clinical setting for addressing immune imbalances?
Well, there is research using IV magnesium, and it breaks asthma attacks in a very, very high percentage of cases. I've seen it work. I usually use it in combination with some other nutrients given IV, such as B vitamins and vitamin C. But I routinely see acute asthma attacks that are not so serious that they have to go to the emergency room, but they come to my office and literally within 2 minutes, the asthma attack is gone. I've seen the same thing with acute migraine headaches. You can knock them out or get 90% improvement in virtually every case with IV magnesium in combination with some other nutrients.
So IV magnesium, what are other favorite forms that you have? Do you use different forms based on the condition or the person or their bowel tolerance, for instance?
Well, for chronic fatigue, there is research supporting the use of a specific type, which is magnesium aspartate. And it's given typically in the form of potassium magnesium aspartate, which is widely available as a supplement. There's controlled studies from way back in the 60s that have not been followed up, but about four different double-blind studies show that chronic fatigue improves with potassium magnesium aspartate. I also find that muscle cramps do better with the aspartate forms than with other forms. With that said, and despite some evidence that says that magnesium oxide is poorly absorbed, there are numerous clinical trials with different clinical conditions showing that magnesium oxide both improves the condition and increases urinary magnesium excretion, which demonstrates that it had to get into the body. So I like magnesium oxide because it's inexpensive and you can get more elemental magnesium into a capsule. There's certainly nothing wrong with chelated magnesium, magnesium glycinate, magnesium gluconate, and many other forms. But I try to go with the practical, what's easiest and what's least expensive.
What about topical forms? Do you have any feelings about topical forms of magnesium?
Well, there are a few people who cannot tolerate oral magnesium, and some of those people can get magnesium in through topical form, and that is available. Now, the only problem with that is it causes skin irritation in a high percentage of cases. So if they tolerate it and they're not able to take oral magnesium, then certainly that's worth a try. But another alternative I like is to dump a few pounds of Epsom salt in a warm bath, and people can soak it in, apparently, through just lying there in a warm bath for 20 minutes.
That's one of my favorite ways to get it in. What about foods? Do you have foods that are your favorite ways to get the magnesium in for yourself or your patients?
Well, as I mentioned before, whole grains contain five times as much magnesium as refined flour. The animal foods, meat, chicken, and fish, have a moderately high amount. Vegetables have a moderately high amount. So it really gets back to avoiding the foods that deplete everything, which would be the sugar and the white flour, and try to eat a wide array of whole foods. I didn't mention nuts. That's nuts and seeds are also pretty rich in magnesium.
So I love that you're such a huge champion for magnesium. It does impact every system in the body, like you said. Is there anything that you didn't mention that you feel like in our 15-minute mapping of the matrix of magnesium, you have to let everybody know?
Yeah, well, if people have severe renal disease, end-stage renal disease, magnesium can actually be toxic. And there are a few medications, such as potassium-sparing diuretics, which also spare magnesium, which means it hangs on to magnesium and the levels can actually rise. Some of the other cardiac drugs can retain magnesium. So if people are on medications such as the ACE inhibitors, you got to be very careful with using high-dose magnesium because it's possible that the level can go high.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gaby. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook, and sometimes my cats in the background. You can visit us and hear more episodes at www.15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to get my therapeutic diet matrix and be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, please go to www.15minutematrix.com/diets. And email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Alan Gaby, and today we will be mapping magnesium on the what?
15-Minute Matrix.
15-Minute Matrix. So, hello, this is Dr. Alan Gaby, and today we'll be mapping magnesium on the 15-Minute Matrix. Okay.